Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Charlie and Matt with me today, as always, every Friday when we record, publish this on Saturdays. If you're enjoying it, give us a like, give us a five-star review in your podcasting platform of choice. We have like 27 five-star reviews or something like that on Spotify, and then a bunch more on Apple. But if you're listening on Spotify, give me 2 seconds here and pump us up a little bit. Okay, today we are talking about hash price, ASIC prices, pretty quickly, like 5 minutes on that, because that's probably all we need to really talk about with that M60 launch. So we'll talk about those details. Then we're going to go over and talk about Marathon with its $750 million offering stock dilution. Talk about that for a second. And lastly, going to finish off with SOFON, Ordinals, and what is MEV on top of Bitcoin. That'll be the meat of today's conversation. So you definitely want to stick around, because Charlie just put out a great new article that we'll link in today's show notes about that very topic. First, a word from our sponsors. Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering, and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch. Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com.
Hey, Mining Pod, I'm Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council. The Texas Blockchain Summit is now the North American Blockchain Summit. The same emphasis on policy, energy, and Bitcoin mining, but now expanded by working with our partners across the country. We've got great sponsors lined up like Riot, Marathon, GDA, CleanSpark, Bitdeer, Lancium, Cormint, Compass, HTS, Crypto Power, Priority Power, Sonoda, and many more. Solidify your next deal or JV, or just come for the networking on November 15th through 17th in Fort Worth, Texas, for the third annual North American Blockchain Summit. We'll see you there.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Okay, welcome back to the show. Let's talk about hash price. Things are a little better. Got over $70 per petahash this week. We're looking at a hash rate index chart. If we're on YouTube right now watching this, and then on a podcast, you can't see it, obviously, but that's where we're at. So Charlie, I'm going to throw it over to you for a mining take. Is this the time to purchase units right before the bid up in the cost of these units going into a bull run?
It totally depends on your strategy, I think. I said this before, I think, in previous weeks, but like there are a lot of options available. It depends on how urgent you are, what kind of cash you have on hand, timeline for deployment. I think we're in a better place than we have been historically, because miners have more options. So you can employ more strategies going into the halving than you've ever been able to before. And then, I mean, typically, if you go to back test and look at where what options were available to you in various stages of the bull and bear, I just think there haven't been that many options. It's almost been like binary. Now you have a multitude and kind of a way to like deploy and hedge, and you can do an iterative rollout. I mean, it's just a very good time to be making decisions in mining right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the last time ASICs were this cheap was like 2020, like kind of around March, April 2020, when we know what was happening in the financial system around that time, right? So if you've been waiting on the sideline with cash, I don't know how many people have actually been doing that. But if you have, right, ASICs are cheap, you know, and the ETF news is bringing up price a little bit. We just saw hash price pick up. You know, obviously you have to procure them, you have to get them deployed, etc. But your ROI break even if you're sub $0.05 per kilowatt hour is like 6 months.
Yeah.
Miners know what that means, right? Miners know what that means. They know the timeline, you know, until the halving. So it's an interesting time. Like, Bitcoin is so difficult to predict, right? I feel so much for like financial analysts at mining companies. You are dealing in one of the most unpredictable markets out there in a tightly competitive industry. But the fact of the matter is right now, ASICs are cheap. Do with that what you may.
Yeah, I just think we'll look back at this year as being, especially the latter half of this year, as a good time to acquire ASICs. I just think that, you know, the majority of the first half of next year is probably a good time to buy. And then probably after the halving. It just depends like how, you know, how you hook them up, what your timeline is, and what you do after that. So I think another comment I want to make on this M60 series is that, you know, we've seen the form factor of ASICs since the S17 model remain pretty much the same kind of vertical two stack for Bitmain and the single long oversized shotgun model for the Watts miner. And MicroBT is now building kind of the rack mounted and or immersion rigs. So I just think I just like to see new form factors come onto the market, because it actually kind of has all these downstream of the ASIC kind of implications for airflow, rack space, deployment strategy. So I guess we'll see how that changes the actual physical build out of the space in the years to come.
For those interested, there's three options: air cooling, Watts miner, M60S and M60, 186 terahash or 170 terahash, with efficiency of 18.5 joules per terahash and 19.9 joules per terahash respectively. So the M60S, actually, I'm going to correct myself, is between 186 and 170, and the M60 is 172 to 150. And then there's both a hydro model with significantly higher terahash. It's like 390 to 360. There's two models there. And then there's a immersion model, which is like 298 to 270. And so there's a few different options they laid out here, which is great. Great to have more options. But that was hotly anticipated. Of course, it comes after the Bitmain announcement and the Canaan or Canaan announcement, however you want to say it. Matt,
we'll never figure it
guys,
out.
Did yeah. you guys see the announcement video, like, of the presentation?
I did not. I saw like the photos.
We'll have to throw it in the show notes or something, Will. It was electric. I mean, the presenter was so excited.
Is that the one that Kevin from Foundry posted?
Kevin Zhang posted.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just pull it up now then.
Maybe it might be a show notes. It's a very entertaining clip.
Okay, a show notes.
I just think more presenters should come with his energy, is all I'm saying. Maybe we should start our shows the way that he starts.
We should get him on the podcast to talk about various Watts miner models. It'll be the most exciting podcast you'll ever have.
Let's do it. Okay, let's go over to Marathon. I gotta throw this up on the screen. Okay, this is from our friends over at the Miner Mag. Marathon eyes another $750 million equity raise. This comes after a few different financing options that they've rolled out over the time being. Marathon, of course, is one of the largest miners by exahash. And then in terms of like stock market itself, one of the largest market caps, if not the largest. I think it's inching back towards 2 billion. Last cycle, it clipped like 8 billion during the peak. So pretty big stock in terms of Bitcoin. Here, they're raising $750 million in equity. It's diluting everyone else on the market. This follows their strategy, of course, of trying to be the biggest miner by exahash, holding onto their Bitcoin, using a hosted model where they're not building infrastructure, they're deploying in other people's facilities, and then using the public markets in order to like to buy as many machines as possible. Last year, they did this as well. I think they had an equity raise of some sort, and they went out and bought a bunch of XP. So this is right on par with like their strategy. Of course, a lot of people look at this and be like, I'm upset. I hold Marathon and I'm getting diluted. But I don't know. I guess you kind of like know to expect that when you're purchasing the stock.
I don't know. Do you really know that? I'm not gonna. I would be not the most enthused if I was a stock shareholder. But here's like, I'll paint a silver lining. I think. Yes. Last cycle, a lot of miners were had this philosophy of holding as many Bitcoin as they could. When the market turned, they sold a lot of coins at a loss throughout 2022. I think a lot of lessons were learned back then. And I think Marathon trying to hold on to as many Bitcoin now as possible could mean in the next cycle, in the run-up, their financial desk, the decisions that they make on that side of things could potentially separate themselves from other miners and capture a large return on their Bitcoin holdings in dollar terms, which should make shareholders much more happy if they can pull it off. Charlie?
Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot of specific insight to shareholder dilution as a means of raising capital. It certainly is it seems to me like the lowest friction way for these companies to do this. So, you know, buyer beware of like that risk in reality. But it seems to me that I haven't looked across the entire public market space, but like most of the public miners have done this considerably and have kind of, they seem to have reached like a healthy, stable level. And they're able to build up maybe more cash reserves now. I just think this is probably the kind of risk associated with having exposure to public miners, which tend to be like kind of more reflexive stocks for Bitcoin bull markets, or they seem to like have these characteristics. So like maybe the kind of risk and cost for having this kind of reflexive exposure to Bitcoin price and mining economics is just the fact that you have these dilution events. So yeah, we'll see. I don't own any public miner stocks.
Good points. So I think we'll talk with Anthony Power about this once we get towards the updates for November and October. So it'll be in a few weeks from now. That being said, we have seen a lot of miners do the equity dilution, and you only have a few choices, right? It's mine Bitcoin, sell Bitcoin, mine Bitcoin, hold Bitcoin, use debt, pay high interest rates, or dilute with equity. This is basically like the three options you have. And some miners do all of them together. Some just pick one or two, and some just go all in on one. And each of them has had different results. Some of them catastrophic. I mean, we can even go back to like 2022 where people were just like levered really high on debt and they went under because those interest payments ratcheted up. So sometimes it's better to turn to the public market. Also, another point to be made is my understanding with these equity offerings, you don't necessarily have to issue all of them when you're raising. So you can go to like a limit of the cap and then you can go under it and just purchase as much as you want from it. So we'll have to see more details there.
I think, again, a similar take from the ASIC, my thoughts on the ASIC market is like, I like to see that there's a lot of differentiation across the different public miners. They kind of are picking a lane, like having different strategies, whether they're a hosting or infrastructure, full stack, clean energy, energy agnostic. I just like to see a lot more optionality so we can really kind of see how execution and really the market treats these different strategies.
I love it. Okay, last topic for today. Let's just hand it right over back to Charlie. We're talking about Sofon,
quote, oh, man.
Ordinal Hub.
Oh man,
one man caused the Bitcoin ordinals bear market.
Okay, so in Ordinal's land, if you're a miner, this is probably one of the most interesting topics you can talk about right now, which is like, what's happening as far as transaction ordering? How can you do interesting strategies to capture more value in Bitcoin? But so in Ordinal's land, where we are not just making normal Bitcoin transactions, we have another fungible token protocol on top of it. I've been very critical of it. It's called BRC20. And it's significant market capitalization. It's like $100, $200, $300 million of these fungible tokens. But so the way you mint, or rather the way you create the token, is you issue an inscription which has a deploy command. And in that deploy command, it has your token ticker and the total supply of it. And the first deploy for each ticker that gets included into a block becomes the canonical, like, issuance of that token. So if you are watching the mempool, if these transactions are broadcast publicly, as most transactions are, you can see, oh, someone's trying to deploy, the mining pod token. And you see that floating around the mempool, you know its fee rate. And if you have an automated system, you can throw in your, you know, the exact same deploy inscription and beat with a higher fee rate and beat that into a block, or even a higher or a lower transaction index within that block. And you can become the canonical issuance of that transaction. So what a notable Bitcoin dev, Ryan Dell, kind of a famous guy in the Bitcoin, in the ordinal space. He has the dick butt, basically.
Wait, you gotta explain that.
It's the second inscription ever. You have Casey, the inventor, and then you have the dick butt, which is the second inscription, which is a dick butt. It's a funny meme. And so he creates this bot. He creates this bot, which watches the mempool, and when it sees one of these BRC20 deploy transactions, it actually just does the same one, issues the same one with a higher fee rate to try to get into a block before that. And he did this with an incredibly high success rate, like 75% success rate. But the other kicker is that for the token supply each time, he limited to one. Instead of like there were like 21 million or 100 million or a trillion, each token issuance, he just pretty much nuked. And it was like, there's only one supply for the token. And what it did was, because BRC20 is the majority of inscriptions by number of inscription, there was no incentive to then mint out all these token supplies. So basically you can literally see inscription volume plummet when a major BRC20 token gets minted out, but then it goes from like low to zero whenever Rindell deploys this bot, because no one can really use BRC20. And he called it the Sophon, which is a reference to a science fiction kind of weapon in a great series called The Three Body Problem. And it was really fun. I think there's a lot of really interesting takeaways from this. One, it was fairly cheap to do this. This, you know, BRC20 is the most popular type of transaction on Bitcoin by a massive amount this year. And he spent, what, under 0.02 Bitcoin to do it for a month. So he basically nuked like the entire incentive model for like a few $100. Just strategically deployed into a certain transaction type. And so he did that. Now he turned it off, and you can see that as soon as he turned it off, because it ran out of funds, inscription activity jumps back up again. He's literally causative of this phenomenon the past 20 days. So
Wait. Let me get this straight. I just want to see if I understand this. So he sabotaged essentially the whole BRC20 space by RBFing, that's like pretty much what he's doing. He's like seeing these deployed transactions.
It's a similar effect. Yeah.
Just like doing the same thing, copying the transaction, at least the part that's going to go into the witness field, right? The actual thing that's being read by the BRC20 standard. And he's doing that same transaction with a higher fee, such that the people that actually want to deploy it no longer can.
Yeah, their inscription basically gets included into a block, and if that block happens after Rindell's one, or if it happens at a lower transaction index within that block, it's not considered canonical deployment of that token.
That is hilarious.
And this
also
is
brilliant.
For what it's worth, I wrote about this in March when the token standard was launched. And this is all we talked about. I was very critical of BRC20 as a standard. I was like, this is a fun thing. This is subject to minor MEV. This will never work. Woe is me. I was very wrong about this. The market is very irrational. But I think it's fascinating because it was fairly simple to execute from a developer and funding standpoint. And I mean, it's the kind of thing that like won't survive long term, because all it takes is one other person to deploy another bot, another Sophon, which then competes and bids against it. Now you have, and perhaps even depending on their budget, another event like May, when we saw the BRC20 kind of mania all bidding against each other to get into blocks. This makes Bitcoin's mempool and Bitcoin's block production very PvP. But I will shout out to Rindell, because he donated the entirety of all his UTXOs, which were just sitting there on useless deployed transactions, to OpenSats, and he's very clear that it's not, his goal is not to like sabotage everything. It's rather to experiment and to demonstrate interesting techniques. But like, this is another shot across the bow. I feel like there's many this year where it's like, when we have different types of transactions in Bitcoin, which are not exclusively monetary on the base layer, things get very complex really quick and the incentives shift. And now I just think you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Like, whether or not we should or shouldn't have fungible tokens, whether they make sense long term from a fee structuring standpoint, is almost irrelevant. All it takes is more predators lurking in the dark forests of the mempool. So maybe he's going back, and or maybe someone else is inspired here and just going to say, I'm going to make a more sophisticated Sofon, one that you cannot detect, so I can own all these. This is fascinating. I'm going to throw it to you guys because I talked about MEV. This is, I think, going to be the conversation of 2024 and 2025. Thoughts?
This is a really interesting story. I can't wait to read your article. This like just dropped, so this is like,
yeah, fresh, it was an hour ago before this
fresh podcast. First reaction out of me and Will. But the people that are like anti-ordinals, because basically blocks have been inordinately larger than they have been historically, right? Taking up the full witness size in some blocks, should be heralding this developer for just like being a savior of block space. Also, the UTXO set has expanded drastically through the BRC20 standard, so he is actively playing defense for the faction of people that disagree with the standard, right? Even though he's simply experimenting and trying out things, it is an underlying flaw in the method of how BRC20 is minting assets, right, and deploying new types of custom tokens. But on the whole, it is saving the computational resource intensity of nodes, right? Because you don't have to have as much in memory from a smaller UTXO set size, and you are less in storage from storing witness data. This is it's really interesting. The fee thing is a whole nother discussion, but neat stuff.
My favorite thing about this is the discussion of MEV on Bitcoin, because that discussion has been a long time coming, with some people talking about it like years ago, going back to Bitcoin talk stuff, started picking up a little bit more in like 2018, 2019, when we started seeing like the inklings of it with DEXs on top of Ethereum. We had some people talk about like what's going to happen with Bitcoin fees in a post-subsidy world. And then it's picked up so much more over the last 9 months with ordinals and inscriptions, of course. And this is one of the first instances where we're seeing like transaction ordering, like where you're putting your information in a block, really matter. So we did see that a little bit in March, and Charlie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like that became like a larger thing during that time. But this Sofon activity certainly shows that you can have some sort of MEV on top of Bitcoin that is akin to what we've been seeing in Ethereum for the last few years, where you can back run, front run, sandwich attack. There's lots of different ways to like exploit this. And it gets even more tricky if we start seeing these things become monetizable. Like a lot of these BRC20s are not worth anything. I wish we had pulled this up already, but I know there's some BRCs that are worth some money. I think like ORDs are worth some money to people. But right now there's not that. So that's the only thing I push back on, is like, how big does this get if BRCs don't go anywhere? Like maybe this gets bigger if we have runes come in or like a different token standard pop up, but it could just be a flash in the pan for that reason. And it's just like a dynamic for the moment.
Yeah, it's hard to say on what timeline this becomes a more material deal, or perhaps actually integrated into block production itself. Because it's, note, I will distinguish, this was a person who did not work with a mining pool, who did this independently, alone dev, if you will. But like now, it's anyone who looks at block production is like, oh, this is a fascinating thing. This did present a real MEV opportunity. This has happened more than once in BRC20 land, happened last May and this past month. I think it's just not outside the question for it to extend and kind of spill over outside this weird JSON fungible token standard, like into just other Bitcoin transaction types. And I don't know what those are going to be, but we're seeing a resurgence of drive chain, of the RGB conversation, of like a lightning channel open and closing. These are now kind of activity that don't have, it's not like sending a just normal Bitcoin transaction. These are more complex and have ancillary benefit and cost to them. So I just think that with complexity comes opportunity here. And the more expression Bitcoin gets and the more expression people want to have on the base layer, even if we never fork or soft fork ever again, there's still just enough design space and messing around space for Bitcoin to have a sophisticated MEV activity on it sometime over the next decade. I think it's probably sooner than later.
Which would be pretty cool. Pretty cool indeed.
A little scary, but also, I mean, it's inevitable, right?
I mean, this just made me think of like the other instances of MEV we've seen in the past. And I had one person at Flashbots, we were talking about this back in 2021, just talking about like, is there MEV on Bitcoin? And this is before inscriptions really was a thing. And they were estimating there's like $10 to $50 million worth of MEV on Bitcoin at the time. And I don't know like the time period for that, if that was like over a year, over a day, whatever it was. But it was, the idea around it was basically like, there is potential for if you need to close something with an exchange very quickly and someone front runs you or something like that, you could end up in a situation where you lose value. Here, this is much more concrete. Now, there has been other instances at MEV, I would argue, like edge cases. And this is something I just wanted to bring up, see what you guys thought about it. It's like, what is MEV on Bitcoin? Because we've had pools attack each other and they try to get that tip of the chain. They try to land first. Not a ton of stuff fighting over transaction fees. I think there was something this year where someone like fat fingered something and there was pools fighting over that transaction fee. There's a few blocks going back and forth for it, but that's mostly been it as of now, but kind of depends on how you define MEV.
You want to go, Matt?
Sure. I mean, we're like semantics, right? It's like,
but that's it's the like, fun of it.
It could just be simply like transaction ordering by fee to get the most Bitcoin, right? And just not censoring any transactions, right? That could technically be called MEV. But in the like Ethereum sense, it's kind of like more having to do with kind of off-chain like order books to basically get your transactions included and almost like systematized front running to an extent of noticing opportunities because there's on-chain markets where people are trading and doing financial activity, noticing that, searching for it, proposing it to somebody that's actually going to produce the block, right? And then them taking, splitting some kind of benefit, right? Splitting the share. With Bitcoin, the story gets interesting because of where I think we are in Bitcoin's evolution. There's a lot of talk of covenants right now. There's more asset issuance protocols that are being tested, right? We just talked about Taproot assets. Now that has a completely different implementations from things like Rune or BRC20s, which we aren't necessarily going to get into today. But there are more intriguing kind of second layer outside Bitcoin ecosystem protocols that are developing. Taproot introduced a certain amount of developer capabilities already. People are talking about things like APO, CheckSig from Stack that will bring even more with covenants, right? What are the implications of that when already, in Bitcoin politics, mempool policy is a hotly debated topic, right? And the RBF flagging things that happened last year, it is not an easy time to be a Bitcoin core developer. And I guess I'm just going to take this opportunity to thank people like Gloria Zhao that are really involved in helping kind of maintain the mempool aspect of Bitcoin core code. But I think we're really just on at the beginning of a lot of these discussions, Will, of MEV, of how these technologies are going to impact ordering and the nature of Bitcoin transactions themselves, from kind of simple transfers to are they doing more than that?
Very eloquent.
Yeah. Well said. I think you say it really well, Matt. I personally, I like to try to define MEV as broadly as possible. Like, I remember it used to be called, like, it was originally the nominal was minor extractable value. Yeah. Like maximum extractable value, which I think makes sense. It's a broader term. And I think MEV, I said this, it's kind of like rock and roll. Like, it's a big concept and it changes from decade to decade. And you have a bunch of different subgenres. And so I think MEV, anything that is not simple, dumb transaction selection is MEV. And then you have kind of scale and amount of it and different strategies deployed. I don't envy the Bitcoin core devs who have to figure out how to do this. I actually think that the ecosystem is quite underprepared for this, because I would say there's been an assumption, at least by my kind of evaluation, an assumption that this just wouldn't happen. And also culturally, a lot of Bitcoin has kind of segmented itself off from being familiar with what happens on other blockchains. So we've seen that the mind share on Bitcoin tends to focus only about what's happening on Bitcoin and not like MEV on ETH. So like, there's not really this kind of like, I would say, it doesn't seem to me like there's like a developer or kind of ecosystem, a natural ecosystem defense from like just from a sophistication standpoint, which means two things. One, it means there's fewer people like looking to conduct, I would say, very extractive MEV, and fewer people to kind of defend. But as we saw in ETH, this, you know, things ramped up very quick. It was like a year or two from MEV being a kind of an edge case thing to being a very sophisticated, well-understood industry. I don't see why that doesn't happen on Bitcoin. I would just say, look at Bitcoin's block time, and you'll see that MEV on Bitcoin, if and when it happens, is just going to probably have a different personality to it. I like to say, it's almost like in between blocks, you could pick up the phone and call somebody and have a conversation, and people could, like, you know, manually construct a transaction in that block time. That's a very different environment than Ethereum. So maybe there's an actual, like, I would almost call MEV biz dev component that we could see where, you know, I imagine like kind of the New York Stock Exchange trading floor of like guys on two phones, like doing MEV deal flow. This is just in Charlie's science fiction futurist view, but I don't know. It's like, this is a really exciting time to, I would say, be a little bit of a heterodox Bitcoin thinker to say, ah, what if Bitcoin does not look like what most people think it will or would have? What if it actually looks a little bit different? And that's where the opportunity lies.
We should do some bets next week. Look at some volumes and come back and come up with some guesses that we put some Bitcoin on against each other to see how much MEV would be on Bitcoin 1 year from now, like inscription numbers and ordinal volumes and all that. Because the thinking, of course, of what you're saying is if Bitcoin pumps, an asset standard takes off, whether it be BRC20 or something else, then you're going to have all this activity pop up. So we should put some money on the line to make it interesting next week.
Well, there's tools for that. We can sign a PSBT kind of, anyway.
Yeah.
You use BitVM to create a conditional, whatever. Yeah.
Paging Robin.
What were you saying, Matt?
I was just going to say to the listeners out there that I think the best thing you could do to have a say in this sort of stuff is run a node, right? Run the software, because you can dictate, right, what Bitcoin basically you're a part of.
We like to hear that. Okay, we'll close out for this week. Be sure to subscribe if you are listening on YouTube or on the podcast. We'll see you guys again next week.